My name is Alex, and I'm an alcoholic.
Tonight's speaker, along with a couple other people in the room, were at the first birthday party I ever went to sober. And I think one of the most important things for me as a newcomer was seeing people who have decades but stay in the middle of the bed and show us that we can have these happy, fulfilling lives. So I'm very excited to introduce Alex.
My name's Alex. I'm an alcoholic. I was looking at this sobriety counter, or my sobriety date's February 5th, 1982. So according to this, I have 377,420 hours of sobriety. Now, when I first came in, if someone stood up here and said that, I would say they're lying. There's no way. No one stays sober, because when I got here, I was 20. So obviously, when you're 20, someone that's got 43 years of sobriety, you're like, whatever. Now, if someone said they had 30 days of sobriety, you have my attention. Because I couldn't go a week without drinking or using drugs from about the time I was, 13 years old. That was my whole life. And I actually came in here February 18th of 1980. And in fact, my first tomorrow, February 25th, 1980, I walked in that back door, and my now wife was standing against that wall, and I had scoped her out at a meeting about my friend, my buddy had been in some treatment centers, and he drugged me to a NA meeting over at Peachford, and I had absolutely no interest in being there, but I saw this girl who's sitting right there, and she was in treatment at 17. I said, I want to meet her. And he said, you can't do that. I said, well, let's sneak her out. Because I had a pocket full of drugs too, and take her up to my favorite watering hole, which was Green's Disco. Has anyone in here ever gotten drunk at Green's Disco?
Me.
Anybody? That's why you're in AA, right? Did you ever go to Penny a Beer, Quarter of Schnapps? Whew, man. But anyhow, so I my friend says we're going to this meeting because I was ready. And I said, is that girl going to be there? He said, well, you can't, when you come in the program, you're not supposed to, that's not why you're going. I said, sure. And so I walked in and we locked eyes. It was love at first sight. And we got married in 1980, April 15th, August 15th. And she's been sober 45 years this summer. Now, I went in and out for a couple of years. That marriage thing was kind of frightening, so she had to endure me picking up about 11 more white chips. So, us guys are, the women are usually the strong ones in the family. And so, thank God we're still married. My sponsor used to say, when you tell your story, you should get dressed up, because it gives the new people hope to see an alcoholic and drug addict that actually is dressed normally. And because the night I walked in here, my first time, I was wearing an old thermal underwear that had a hole in the back of it because it had gotten soaked in battery acid. Because when you're an alcoholic, you just take your clothes and you throw them in the trunk. It's not like you've got some some fancy suitcase. So I'd been over at Jacksonville State on my tour of colleges that I continued to flunk out of, but I had pulled this shirt out, and I kept wondering, why does it itch? Because chunks of it, but if you put battery acid on clothes, then they come apart. So that was what I was wearing. The night I walked in here, I had battery acid on my thermal underwear, a pair of corduroys, and she fell madly in love with me. And the rest is history. So that's my story. I said, we hope you won't find this in bad taste. Well, most of my prior to coming in here was bad taste, which I'm sure it was y'all's as well. But I mean, here's when you've been sober 43 years, I mean, it's funny, the last couple of days I just broke down in tears just being so grateful to be sober. Because, I've got two children, I've got six grandchildren, been married. I mean, and when I got here, I was burnt out and busted and nowhere to go. I'd flunked out of three colleges and couldn't keep a job. And, you know, when you're 20 and you feel like your life's over, I mean, that's really how I felt. Fortunately, I came into the AA, and it's not like when I got sober that everything got better, but I was given a design for living, which I grew up in the church, and I mean, you know, if you lived in the South and you didn't believe in God, I mean, that might get you a beating at a bar. I mean, even if you were sitting there drinking, and some guy said, well, I'm an atheist, you'd be like, what the hell? And, you'd have to give him a beating for being an atheist while you're all sitting there drinking. Because you just, you know, if you live in the South, you believe in God. I mean, right? I mean, we did. I mean, that was just like, come on, man. And so, but I mean, you know, it was just this, like, yeah, I believe in God, you know, like Shine a Light by the Rolling Stones and Simple Man by Lynyrd Skynyrd and God, Guts, and Glory, and just, you know, but I'd never been given a, like, hey, you're created for a reason other than just to satisfy your impulses, and that God created you for a reason to maybe do something for others, which I had absolutely no interest in doing unless there was a mutual exchange, which, you know, when you're an alcoholic, that's kind of how we live. You got some for me, I got some for you. If you don't, well, it's been nice knowing you. And that was kind of how I lived. I don't know if y'all can relate to that, but anyhow, I mean, I didn't grow up. Used to be when I came in, these people would tell these great stories about how they'd been in motorcycle gangs and ate prisons and shot people. And, you know, it was almost like if you had this great story, you got put on the speaker circuit. And, you know, but then you start thinking that half of that's not true. And, you know, when you really think about it, I'm really just an average kid from an average family in Doraville, Georgia. And I grew up just down the street. Went to Sequoia High School. Chances are, if you graduated from Sequoia, instead of going to Harvard, you probably went to AA. And they're right. Am I right? Huh? We really put out a lot of alcoholics and drug addicts, didn't we? We had a good time, though, didn't we? Huh? Did you have a good time? I did. I don't remember any trigonometry or anything, but I learned how to measure, you know, stuff. But, and this distribution and marketing, right? Yeah. All right. So, but I mean, so, you know, I just grew up. My dad was an alcoholic. My family, it's funny, as you get older, like when I was younger, I had this view of my father as, you know, like, you know, my father's mean and, you know, and all this stuff. You're a kid, you're like, God, he was so rough on me. Well, he wasn't touchy-feely, but it's funny, as you age, you gather respect for your father. And you also start seeing, man, my parents were just doing the best they could, too. I mean, because I have a lot of alcoholics and drug addicts and depressed people in my family, which you just kind of didn't talk about. Like my father would tell me, hey, you know, your great-grandfather committed suicide. And I'd be like, what? He's like, yeah, he shot himself over some failed land deal. And I was like, really? That's terrible. He's like, yeah, Braves won last night. And you know that. But I mean, that's kind of like, I mean, and I had a first cousin that died of a drug overdose. In fact, I'm going to my uncle's funeral, and both his kids died of drug overdoses because that's what my family does. And I remember my dad called to tell me same thing, you know, oh gosh, Andrew died of a drug overdose last night, isn't that sad? Yeah. Did you watch the Braves? I mean, that's kind of how, you know, that was how we talked to each other. I mean, there just wasn't a lot of, you know, touchy-feely. It's just you get along, you go along, you do the best you can, and if you feel bad, who's talking about feelings? I mean, are you kidding me? You feel what? Just get your ass to work, son. And so, you know, you suppress a lot of stuff growing up. And, you know, and the great thing about the program is you know, we kind of uncover it as we get sober. But God, if I'd had to uncover all that stuff when I walked through the door, I don't know if I could. I couldn't handle a lot of stuff. But that's what's so magnificent about the program is we see, hey, we are bodily and mentally different than others. But that doesn't mean I can't have a life. And so you know, I got drunk. I got thrown in jail. I didn't go to prison. I just did stupid stuff that you do. But as my drinking and drug use progressed, you could see, you know, the insanity progresses with it. Just, you know, even at 18, 19, my old friends start distancing yourself. Of course, I got thrown out of basketball. I got in trouble with the Dorval. The Dorval cops, for some reason, always had some issue with me. You know, they were always after me. I mean, like, I must be like Al Capone or something, you know. But it's like, why did the police keep bothering me? I mean, I was just driving up a one-way street the wrong way, drinking. I mean, what's the problem, man? Why are they picking on me, man? You know, it ain't fair. I mean, I was trying to come home early. You know, and there was always some excuse like that. But anyhow, so I got in trouble with the cops. And I mean, I think I knew from the first time I drank. I think we all do. I mean, to me, it was like magic. It's like the first time I drank alcohol, I mean, I don't want to be sacrilegious, but it was like I'd been born again. You know, like, all. I mean, I know it was the first time I snorted cocaine, but the problem is it only lasted 15 minutes. But now, alcohol, I love to drink, and I like to do drugs that would keep me up where I could drink, like, for hours on end, you know, get drunk and get rowdy. I mean, that was kind of all, and that's what I like to do, is get drunk, get rowdy, and yell, and just get in trouble, and just kind of just to hell with everybody. And so that doesn't work in, like, our society. You quickly find out that there's no place for that type of person. They send you to prison, or they send you to the nut house, or you end up dead. And I was certainly headed in one of those directions. So I had this friend that started going to the program, and I knew, and I'm not going to go into much of stories. I got in trouble. I got kicked off the senior trip for fighting, and like I said, got thrown out of athletics. And, you know, you're always getting these lectures, you know, why don't you live up to your potential? And I'm like, why don't you get out of my face, man? You know, why don't you leave me alone? I want to get high. And you're in the... So you migrate to only people that drink like I do. That's why so many of my old friends are in here are either dead. One of them's laying up at Shepherd's right now. In fact, I took him to a meeting last summer. Now, he doesn't have a problem now, but he's been drinking. Well, he hit a tree, and now he can't walk, and he's only got use of one arm. But it wasn't alcohol now. Okay, he fell asleep at the wheel. But, I mean, it doesn't end well for us. So I finally, this friend of mine came in the program, and he took me to a meeting. And, I mean, it was, I had tried to stop at 18 after I got thrown off the senior trip for fighting. Another great moment in the Livingston family history. here comes, you know, Junior. He's been thrown off the boat in the Bahamas. We got in a big brawl. I've often thought, what poor soul. Can you imagine you buy tickets for a cruise and all of a sudden you're on a cruise with three high school senior trips? I mean, if I'm those people, I said, I got to get my money back because we were fighting and drinking. But I came home and I said, I have a problem. I knew I had a problem. And so I came back and I tried to quit and I lasted a week. And that was the longest week. That week lasted a year. But I tried to quit on my own, and, you know, as soon as somebody, I mean, I was off to the race as well. Finally, I came in here at 20, and I, you know, the last time I came in, I was shooting dope and drinking. I remember one of the last times I drank, we were drinking moonshine out of an ashtray, because the reason you did that is you had to light it to see if it turns blue, you can drink it. If it turns green, it's got wood poison. And it'll blind you. But have you ever thought that maybe you shouldn't drink things that catch on fire? I mean, have you ever tried to light your milk in the morning? It doesn't catch on fire. The moonshine does. And you think, well, gosh, I think I'll drink it. It's okay to drink it. So, I mean, doesn't that speak to the fact that you're probably an alcoholic if you're drinking stuff that catches on fire? And so... So I got here, and you know what's great is when I walked through the doors of AA, it was like, these people are speaking my language. I mean, I remember I went home and I read, somebody gave me a big book, and here I am, I'm 20, and I start reading Bill's story, and this guy's a World War I veteran, and I could immediately relate to the kind of drinking he was talking about doing. And it was like, God, this guy is, I mean, this is it. When I started reading the book, these people are talking our language. And I was fortunate because I came in with the first wave of young people. Like back then, there was a lot of, I mean, some of the old timers around it, and well, I've spilled more than you drank. And of course, young people would say, well, if you didn't spill it, it wouldn't take you so long to get here. But you know. But also, I think the fact that most of us were also doing drugs, and I know this is singleness of purpose, and again, alcohol is my first love, or was. But the point was the drugs, like, accelerated the addiction. Like, you just got on this fast track to nowhere. And so a lot of us came in, and I remember there was a guy, I came into N.A., and, I mean, I don't want to speak ill of another program, but at that time, N.A. was fairly new. And so, you know, there was a lot of people my age. Well, we were kind of just doing the same crap we used to do, but we weren't using. Well, I didn't come in to have long hair and, you know, live the old life. I wanted to have a new life. And I'd see people with 4 or 5 years sobriety, and they're still, like, you know, kind of not... don't have a job or kind of living off the grid. And I'm like, I don't want to live off the grid. I mean, I can do that. I know how to do that. I'd like to get sober and like maybe have a life, like a job and a family and all that. So I went, and the thing in NA too, there wasn't a lot of time. If you had 5 years, you were like a guru. So I went over to this place called Biscayne Room where there were people like Hal Calhoun. And Rusty showed up, and I'm trying to see anybody. But these people told me the truth. They were older than I was, but they said, son, you're going to die. You're going to be dead before you're 25, and this is what you've got to do to get sober. Now, if you don't want to do it, go back out and try some controlled drinking and see how that works for you. And, you know, we all keep an extra suit for when we go to funerals for people like you. And so they told me the truth. I had a sponsor. He finally set me down after I'd gotten married in my 11th white ship. And I said, he set me down. He said, if you don't work this program, you'll never see 25. And I believe that. I don't think I would have lived to see 25. I clean up nicely, but back then it was kind of a different story. But my poor wife, I'll never remember the last night I got drunk. I went and got hammered up at Buckhead Saloon. And of course I was yelling at the band and they threw me out. When a bluegrass band is playing and you keep screaming, play Aerosmith, they don't take, they're kind of like, get this guy out of here, man. So out the door I was thrown. I come home, I throw up in the front yard, threw up on our cat, ended up at the bottom of my son's crib with my pants around my ankles. And I remember the next morning I woke up, of course Claudia says, hi, did you have fun last night? Would you like some eggs? Like you get Al-Anon. Of course I'm like, no, I don't want anything to eat. But I remember my son, who's now 44, was looking over the crib at, over his crib at his father. And it struck me, my dad was an alcoholic. I said, I'm going to end up just like my father. And that's what I don't want to be. And so that was the last drink I ever took. And there's a place in the big book, you know, we stay sober one day at a time. But in the big book it says all reservations that I could ever drink, and in my case also use drugs successfully, had to be smashed. And they were. Because I knew, I mean, I've always known I was an alcoholic, really from when I was 15. I knew there was something wrong with me because all I wanted to do was drink and get high. But I knew at that point that I had to do what these people told me. And thank God I listened at that time. Now, if some of you have picked up multiple chips, I pray you won't quit. But I also pray you won't think that there's one more recovery left. Because I've been, when you've been around 43 years, I've been to a lot of funerals and seen a lot of people that I love in here die. And they say, well, I'm just going to go out and, you know, experiment. Well, it might be the last time. And so I'm just thankful that these people like Hal and Craig and Judy and, you know, all these old timers told me the truth and also put up with all my BS. I mean, Rusty and I, we were like oil and water. Here's this guy just comes out of the Marines with his crew cut, and here I am with my long hair. And Ray, I mean, we used to argue, and he thought I was a loudmouth, spoiled-ass punk, which I was. And he was a feisty, just retired Marine captain that would, if he could have, would have taken me out back and given me a beating at that time. But you know what's so magnificent is here Rusty and I are both sober. He's 2 weeks behind me, I think, and two people who are so totally different have come into this program. And that's what's so great about the program is it says that normally people like us would never mix, but that we found this common miracle. And one alcoholic talking to another can immediately establish a relationship and rapport with them like that. I mean, when I started talking to people in the program, they started talking about the way they drink. I was like, yeah, you get it. Now, if I go to church or something, which I go to, and I start talking to people about the way we drink and stuff, or even if you talk to normal people, they're like, well, that's terrible. But if you're talking to a bunch of drunks, you tell a story like, yeah, man, I drove my car and I ran over a chain. People will all start laughing, you know. God, what a great story. You mean you drove your car through a golf course? And, you know, I mean, we think that stuff's funny. Because I think it's like gallows humor. We lived through it. But so people out in the world, they don't get alcoholics. They'll tell you they do. But what's great is you can come in this program like I did, and I finished college, and I got kids, and I remember I started in business, and I went to this old-timer named John Holmes, and he owned his own business, and he'd come in sleeping in an orange grove in his car. And he said, listen, man. He said, I said, well, what do you do when you're out on a sales call and you got to take people to dinner, but you don't drink? Because, you know, back when I started in business in the 80s and stuff, people drank a lot. I mean, it was just, you drank. He said, as long as you're buying, they don't care. And it's true. I would take people to dinner, and if someone's a normal drinker, they don't care if you don't drink. Only alcoholics get upset. Like when I was with people, when I was drinking and using, and they said they didn't drink or use, I was like, man, what's this guy doing here? Get him out of here. I don't want to be around this guy because it's shining a light on my insanity. But it's also, I don't want to hang around with somebody who's going to have one drink. I mean, what a drag, man. I want to be around people that are just freaking, let's go set something on fire tonight. You know, are you right? So when I go take people to dinner, they don't care. Oh, you don't drink? Oh, okay. Well, are you buying? Yeah. Well, great. And so they would just sit there and drink, and you're our designated driver. So all these things that I thought would limit me from being a part of society, that's just up in my mind. People don't care. I mean, it's uncomfortable. I mean, you go to a neighborhood party and want a beer? Well, I'll have some iced tea, you know. Okay. But so what? I mean, is it worth throwing my sobriety and my life away because I'm worried about someone cares about drinking? Somebody really cares about it. I mean, they ain't going to worry about it. So I was able to get out in the world and function. Now, it is interesting, though. I went for a job interview. I remember when I was too free with my sobriety or with my drinking, and I'll never forget, this woman told me, she said, well, someone like you can't make it in business. You got to get you probably should go to work for the government or something like that, get a low level non pressure job, because you know, you alcoholics, you can't handle it. And that fired me up, you know. I said, that's BS. I can, the book says that if I'm sober and have a relationship with God, I can do anything and go anywhere in the world and be around anyone as long as I'm spiritually fit that day. So, you know, I mean, that's the truth. So if you're new, there's no limitations if you're sober. And that's what I wanted to hear. I wanted a life, man. I was sick of just being this deadbeat punk who was going nowhere, and just to be able to go to work every day and get there on time and be a part of a functioning member of society, that's really, you know, it's nice. It really is. I mean, I thought that I wanted to be this, you know, this other thing, but I didn't want to live that way anymore. And you know, my wife and I mean, our first 10 years of marriage, it was hellish. You know, if you put two alcoholics together and we're working on things, and we got our son was born 7 months after we got married. And of course, I tried to leave our marriage and went home to my dad. My dad said, son, you're 20, you're married. He said, you can go home to your house or you can go find a bridge to sleep under, because you are never coming through these doors again. He said, I'm, you know, which was a beautiful thing. It made me go grow up. But, you know, here we are. And I was not a good husband. I mean, just because you're in the program doesn't work you. And I was selfish. And, you know, I just wasn't a good husband. I did things I'm very ashamed of. And my wife, God bless her, about 10 years sober, she ends up in this terrible depression. Now, let me tell you something, folks. If you're taking medicine for depression or something like that, and somebody tells you to get off of it, you need to tell that person, I don't want to hear. Somebody, it says in the book that be quick to see where people of medicine are. Okay, if I'm on something for depression, am I going to listen to a doctor, or am I going to listen to a dude that was sleeping under their bridge a year ago? So where did you get your medical degree? Oh, you know, I read the big book, or I read, that's bullshit. Don't ever let anyone tell you you don't need that. I mean, if you're diabetic and somebody says, well, don't take your insulin. That's insane, man. So if you're in a program and somebody says you got issues, and they start telling you not to take your medication, you need to get away from them fast, man. You put a gun to your head. My wife, I saw her. If you've ever seen somebody with true mental illness, it's like when my wife was up in bed, catatonic, in a fetal position. Well, what step is she working? I was like, how the hell do you work a step when you're in a fetal position, man, and you're freaking out? So she went into the hospital. And what's interesting is I went to see this counselor, and here I was doing my bad husband thing. And this counselor said, you know what? Your wife might come out of the hospital and not even want to be married to your sorry ass. And so I was like, you know, it was like I had some work to do. And also, mental illness runs through my family. I mean, I've been on an antidepressant for 30 freaking years. And that just got me back on the playing field. I mean, how the hell can you work steps when I'm, you know, my mind, when I'm going insane? I got suicidal people in my family. So when people in the program start trying to play doctor, it's like, sure, bro, where's your degree from? Freaking Green's Disco? I mean, come on, yeah. I got my PhD in pharmacology down here, you know. I mixed up some good crystal meth. You know, I know all of that. I mean, forget about it. Seriously, don't listen to those people. I also went to church, man. It says be quick to see where religious people are right, man. I'm going to take any avenue that's going to help me get better. You know, I mean, I love reading the Bible and talking about Jesus, and I love reading the big book. You know, people at church don't get us. I tried to leave. I got all spiritual, said, I don't need to go to AA anymore. I've got church. Well, I almost got drunk. Because when you start talking about somebody that they don't know our disease, they don't know how to do. You know, there are some groups like some Alcoholics Victoria, but I mean, it's like, well, I got sober 30 days. The dude got 30 days is the most time in the room. No. I got to be around people with time and experience and recovery. So you can have both. And so, you know, and you can, I mean, I can't even begin to tell you how this, you know, AA has equipped me to trudge the road to happy destiny. We've been, I mean, I bought a business, I sold it last year, but my wife, my daughter got married to this terrible deadbeat, and he went and got himself killed. And so I'm raising 3 grandsons now part-time. And let me tell you something. Our grandsons are buck wild, son. And I talk about how these kids, why are these kids act like this, man? And somebody will say, are you kidding? They're your bloodline, man. I mean, and that's kind of stupid for me to think I'm going to have sons or daughter and grandchild that act like, well, yes, we want to go to school and study. I mean, you know, why, yes, we want to listen to the teacher. I mean, that's stupid. And so, but I almost, you know, if I told my story here 11 years ago, that's before my daughter and her ex-husband, who's dead now, God rest his soul, that's back before I went to war with him. Because he was, you know, my daughter's no quaint princess. I can tell you, she's wild like I am. But he was a dead ass beat husband. And they got divorced, and we went to war. I said, I threatened to kill him a couple times. And I said, but you know what I recognized is I was trying to control the outcome with this guy, you know. I was trying to play God in his life. Now, you got to protect your family, but, I mean, that was the last 10 years. And, you know, and my grandsons, I've got, they're 15, 13, and 12. And, you know, they've seen their parents divorce and their father die. I'll tell you what, man, if I didn't have this program, I would not have been able to sit those boys down the morning of August 29th and said, boys, I got bad news. Your dad got killed last night in a single car accident. I mean, I couldn't have done that without this program. But also, this program told me chances are he was wasted. He ran up under a truck and almost decapitated himself. But I told them, I said, boys, your father was at work. He was trying to work for you guys, man. Now, he probably wasn't. But the program has told me that I keep my mouth shut. I don't have to be bitter. Now, there's times I want to tell them, hey, man, you're going to, but y'all have taught me, you just keep your mouth shut and you do the right thing. And there's days, man, I don't want to deal with them. I want to be retired. I'm 65. I want to go to the beach and just, but you know, the program says we have to keep living, you know. And so, I mean, that the last 10 years really taught me a lot of humility, and it also shone a light on my glaring character defects. My biggest is my volatility. I mean, I was getting after my grandson Friday, man. I was pointing at his ass. I said, "You disrespect your mother like that and me." I mean, and of course, in our family, we'll just argue and fight in front of anybody. And somebody's looking. We're like, "What are you looking at? You don't even know what the fuck's going on, man." You know what I mean? It's like, you have no clue what's going on in our family. What's your problem? But I was, you know, here I was out in the open at this ballpark pointing at him because he had come up and yelled at me. And his, you know, but I was thinking that old selfishness. I'm like, here I am out here at your game, and this is how you treat me? I mean, it sounds like a drunk, doesn't it? This is how you treat me? I pay for your stuff, and you treat your mother, which if a boy disrespecting his mom, they got to get whacked. I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, it's true. I don't care. I don't go for all this new age garbage. If I talk bad about my mom, you're going to get whacked. I mean, it doesn't have to be just, you know, that over the top stuff. But then you go home and you feel guilty. Like, once again, it's like Rusty told me. Rusty said, "Listen, you've got to respond and not react. Because if you react, all of a sudden, even if that other person is wrong, you've lost any type of moral high ground because you've overreacted so badly. Like if somebody does something and you say, 'Well, I'm going to kill you,' or something, you've gone way out here. And so all of a sudden, I'm the problem." And so Friday, I went home, I was upset. But see, we have a program. And so I could pray, I could ask forgiveness, I could read my book, I could say, "Hey, it's progress, not perfection. This is my worst character defect. My worst character defect is my volatility." I mean, but fortunately, that knowing that, it keeps me humble too. Because if all of a sudden I was just never got angry again or never, I mean, who needs God, you know? So if you got to understand, when you get sober, all your defects of character, it says we continue, we promptly admit we're wrong, we seek through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact, we work on these defects, we're willing to have them removed. When they get removed, I don't know. I'm hoping this one gets removed before I'm 80. I do coach football, though, and I did not get thrown out of a game this year, which is fabulous. If you've been thrown out of a second and third grade football game for arguing with officials, it's like you're probably a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, which I've done. But I mean, you know, I have a program that I can learn, that I can live by. And that's what I always wanted, was a program to live by. And a God that I can go to, that I know that loves me. And also that I'm on a road trudging the road of happy destiny, not to. And I guess, as I wind it up, my biggest, you know, thing that it's funny how fast it goes up here. I had no idea what I was going to say, but my biggest thing to tell you folks, because I mean, if you've been sober 43 years, I mean, I could talk for like, you know, 5 days if I gave you all the ins and outs. But I mean, it's just so magnificent. I have a family. I mean, people like us are not supposed to have children and be parents and be grandparents and own businesses and be part of society. I mean, I coach football. I actually took a sideways and taught school for like 10 years. Isn't that crazy? I mean, what's your background? Where did you? Well, actually, I got thrown. You know, how funny. I mean, but God used me in that because I've been able to share my story with kids that I coached. And actually, a few of them have come to the program. So, you know, when it says we will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it, no matter what I've done, like what regrets I have, and I had quite a few regrets of how I just threw my youth away. But God has used that for me to be able to share, you know, with young people now. and I enjoy coaching. I coach football and all that fun stuff. I mean, I love athletics, but he's been able to use me in that capacity. For some reason, me and the worst kid on the team always bond. Because I get them, you know. I get them. The kids that yes, sir. I don't get the ones that say, fuck you, coach. Like my grandson. I mean, I get them. Excuse my language, but I get them because I know, you know, we're able to reach out to them and bond with them, you see. And to speak into their life. And then it's so beautiful when they come back to you and say, man, coach, thanks for not giving up on me. Or you get a letter just out of nowhere, just like, thank you for being a part of my life. So sobriety's good, man. I fell on my knees Saturday. I was working out, and for some reason I just got hit with this. I was thinking about telling my story, and I just got overwhelmed with gratitude. Because it's almost like the longer you stay sober and the more you see your life, you're coming a culmination. It's like, man, I should have never had this life if not for the people of this program. So if you're new, man, don't give up. Don't give in. Don't think, well, hey, I'm here. And if you do it one day at a time, you will be, great miracles will occur in your life. And I don't care what age you are. I don't care how long. I don't care what you've done in the past. I mean, God can forgive. If you're sober, He can use you in some capacity in somebody's life at some point, and He will. Thank you for having me tonight.
First I slip, and then I crept to a hope-filled dream. Rescue me, and finally, waking there I see. I look into love's window for a soul that's meant for me. Takes me where the promise. All in. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slow, we get just what we need. On a broad highway, stride for stride, we walk eternally. Look into love's window for a heart that beats for me. Takes me where the promises are in. Something.